You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today, the Saturday edition. A lot to talk about today. I'm Mike Blewett, bringing in Kevin Walsh here in a moment. And clearly, it's that time of year where if you're a fan of any sport, you got something to talk about. The NFL gave us a big piece of news yesterday with Dez Bryant being released by the Dallas Cowboys. I'd say it was widely expected, but still, it's always a little bit of a jolt to the system when a player that has represented or embodied the Dallas Cowboys image for this particular generation or this team for the last 8 years is sent on his way, and he's now a free agent. We have the NHL playoffs, which have already started. We have the NBA playoffs, which are upon us, and not to mention Major League Baseball in full swing. I can hear my co-host Kevin Walsh messing with the microphone.
We got to figure this out. Don't worry, Mike.
Ignominious start to the program, but here he is. So with that being said, I'll bring Kevin in. Good morning, Kev. How are you?
I'm doing great. What a terrific intro. Trying to figure out the mics. I've been driving Pete crazy all morning. Going two, three. I now am using two's headset with three's mic. It's been a wild ride on the microphone side of things.
All morning, Mike. All morning.
Yeah. This sounds like a user error situation. I'm not going to throw the producer under the bus.
We didn't have to throw anyone under a bus.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will say that I did a show there on Wednesday. We did our official NFL mock draft, and we'll get into that stuff in the second hour. We'll talk a little bit about that. Kevin contributed as well with some picks, but I tripped over a microphone so badly, and the restaurant. So we do a studio. We do the show from a studio in Manhattan, 34th Street, Studio 34, in Rock and Riley's in Midtown Manhattan, right near Madison Square Garden, a block away. And it is a fishbowl setup, and I look out into a restaurant as I'm doing a show. It was from 5 to 8 p.m., so the place was packed. And I got up during one break to just kind of stretch my legs. It was a three-hour show. And I had the microphone cord wrapped around my leg, which Yikes. I was not aware of. And I almost did a full belly flop onto the stage in the studio. But the microphone came crashing down. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of them is not working as well as
that. So this is your fault.
Yeah, maybe. But frankly, one of our co-hosts, Joe Lisi, did the exact same thing about 5 minutes later after he had laughed at me.
So this room's a death trap.
Going down for the count. Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it's a lot of wiring and entanglements, but enough about that. So
I want to ask you about the mock draft, if possible. I just have a quick question.
I will. Just, yes, give me a minute.
You got it. You got it. You do your thing. You do your thing.
I know you're eager. I know you're eager to talk about the mock draft.
I love mock drafts.
We're going to spend like an hour on it. From 10 to 11. So just hold your horses. You can ask a question in a minute. But I think we'll just talk about Dez for a minute, and I'll save football for the second hour
Sure. Because
we have some other topics to talk about there. But clearly, I don't think it's a shock to anybody that this happened, as I said earlier. But clearly, it is going to create some movement. For his purposes, he's probably a little annoyed that it didn't happen now. He considers it to be personal. And in hearing a lot of other players, I think anytime a player, especially somebody like that, which has been, he's been a high-profile Dallas Cowboy for the last 8 years, he's going to take it personally. They could have kept him because they weren't over the cap, but clearly his production versus his salary number was a problem for them because it limited them in what they can do. They have not had any kind of bonanza of a free agency period. They're relatively capped out. And Dez is going to save a whole bunch of money for this season so they can potentially sign some guys to the back end of the roster or at least gives them some flexibility in case somebody goes down here during OTAs or early in training camp.
The one part of this that surprised me, because I agree, we kind of saw this coming. It was expected that he would go. It was more the fact that Dez wanted to stay. The fact that they never offered him actually the pay decrease that he said he would have actually accepted. If you look at the Cowboys receiving core, I understand that Dez has been bad, but if he was willing to take a pay cut, I don't really feel like then they have the assets to where they can just let him go. Is he Dez Bryant of old? No, I don't even know if he's half of Dez Bryant of old. But this isn't a wide receiver core that can just push someone aside. They don't have that type of depth. That was kind of the part that somewhat caught me off guard, is just how crushed Dez Bryant seemed to be with the way that this was handled by the Cowboys. The fact that it seemed as he was actually willing to take that pay cut to stay in Dallas. And then the fact that pay cut never came. That's what caught me off guard.
I guess fair. I did hear him say that yesterday, but to be frank, during the entirety of this process, he wasn't willing to take pay cuts. And then he rejected it. Then he softened on it a little bit. So I guess by the time this came around, he would have said, yeah, you know, what number do you have for me? So I think it is fair to say that beyond the salary versus production dynamic, there was some pushback from some coaches. We're going to talk about it more in depth later, but Dez called some Garrett guys in an interview yesterday. He just felt like there were guys surrounding Jason Garrett that felt like maybe it was best that they move on. That could be players, that could be coaches. Dez seems to have texted a few guys to let them know what was up, that he knew that they wanted him out. Hard to say. He's obviously hurt by the fact that he was not named a team captain. There were a number of team captains named last year. He wasn't one of them. Guys like Orlando Scandrick, who isn't even on the team anymore and certainly wasn't the level of player that Dez Bryant was a team captain. So I think there's some internal stuff there. Look, I'm not going to spend any more time on bashing Dez Bryant. I think people know that he's a little bit of a hothead. He's had some injuries. He hasn't been a model citizen. I read an article about 2 years ago that estimated that Dez Bryant missed north of 40 meetings in his time with the Dallas Cowboys. Missed them altogether. 40. That's a whole bunch of year. They have effectively, the Dallas Cowboys have tried to, on the down low, employed a babysitter for Dez to make sure he's checking in and showing up and all that kind of stuff. And the guy's almost 30 years old, so... what does that say? Everybody else on the team can show up to the meetings. And if a guy wasn't any good and didn't show up to a meeting, he'd be released the next day. So,
it's interesting,
I guess, that for Dez, and he's going to figure that out wherever he lands next.
It is interesting to watch now a lot of the, I guess the hothead's probably the right word, how that's, they're all trying to spin it into passionate and a strong desire to win. I guess
they all want to win. Every guy.
Like, that's the thing. I mean, I feel like this kind of started with Odell kind of took it to a level. And then when he tried to draw the comparison to what Tom Brady does, it now feels like this is kind of what it's going to become. Where anybody who, you know, has sideline arguments with coaches just goes, I just want to win. And then it's kind of where it's going to be a 50-50 split where people who go, see, they're just passionate. And then the other side, like, what an absolute distraction. What a headache. And there probably will never be an actual compromise in the middle ground. It's like, he's probably frustrated because he wants to win, but it's also not the appropriate way to be going about things because it clearly isn't an effective strategy.
It's kind of funny. It always circles back to that position. Antonio Brown's the best wide receiver. For a while there, he was a model citizen. Now, not so much. You know, sideline tantrums and Facebook living after playoff wins and, you know, getting into radio spats with the quarterback. It's part of the quarterback's fault, too. I'm not absolving him of that. But, you know, it just always comes back to that position. And it is not an excuse. There's plenty of guys that are passionate and want to win and that are better than you. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't do any of this stuff. And look, I'm all for different personality. And the NFL tries to squash personality as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But if you're a distraction, you're a distraction. And Dez and Antonio Brown and Odell have been. So that's the bottom line. We'll definitely talk more about Dez and potential landing spots. In fact, we're going to put a poll up, but I'm going to talk with Kevin during the break to exactly what our answer should be. So we'll put a Dez Bryant poll up here in the next few minutes so that you all can chime in, and we'll discuss it more in the second hour. So NBA playoffs are upon us, Kev, as well. They get started tonight or this afternoon. I have to check
starting
the schedule.
Starting at 3. Exactly. Warriors Spurs so kick us off.
That's a beautiful one to start it off with. So, so just give me a sense, a 10,000-foot view of what you're expecting here. Not necessarily in any – I mean, you can give me a series that you're expecting. You can give me a player that you're expecting to break out. Or an ultimate prediction of what you think is going to happen. So how do you think this is going to shake out?
It's really interesting, I think, from – I mean, I'm sure we'll get kind of more into the specifics later on in the show. I do think each team – and I really believe this because I feel like normally we get into the playoffs and there are just teams that you completely dismiss and there's no reason to really be invested in them. But I really think that every single team has an interesting storyline and you can kind of make a case for it, even if you just take it to the 1-8 matchups where the Timberwolves, to me, are probably one of the better 8 seeds we've seen because had Butler not gone down, this is a team that probably has a home court in the first round. I don't think that they could take the Rockets, but that just shows how good they are. The Wizards get matched up with the Raptors, and because now John Wall's back healthy and the Raptors have their playoff struggles, there's going to be plenty of people that take the Wizards. Even the Warriors, who I think at the beginning of the year were the biggest favorite a team's ever been going into a specific season, like across all sports, are matched up now without Steph Curry. Most people will have them beating the Spurs there, but I don't think that it would be a complete shock if the Warriors were out in round one. And then even you go to the Cavs, who are always the favorites to go out of the East. There's still plenty of people that don't trust this team, and there are people who are actually still taking the Pacers to beat them. So it is one of those things where I still wouldn't be shocked if we ended up with Cavs Warriors 4, but I almost feel like there's an argument to be made for, I mean, within reason, almost any possible series to be our finals matchup. And I think that is one of the things that I am really appreciative of, where I can actually right now, I can say 1-8 on the East, 1-8 on the West. I can get invested in every single series for a specific storyline to watch.
What do you think's the best series in round one?
I think Pelicans-Blazers will be the most exciting. That's the one I think going 7. I think the battle between Anthony Davis and Damian Lillard, kind of just back and forth. Obviously, they won't be guarding one another, but I think that is the thing where you've got two guys that are got a pretty good chance of finishing top 5 on the MVP ballot. Going back and forth, I think they're fairly evenly matched, the two squads. That, to me, is I think that's going to be the best series from round 1.
So it's funny, as I'm on CBS Sports right now, I'm just looking at their experts' selections, their predictions for the first round. Clean sweep of chalk in the Eastern Conference, all of them. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 experts there. Raptors, Celts, Sixers, and Cavs, all the way across the board, all 6 guys all go with the chalk there. You think the Celts were happy to end up with the Bucks versus some of the other teams they could have gotten there?
I think so, mainly because if the Wizards have the star talent with Wall and Beal, and the Heat might be the only team who could make the argument that they have a better coach than who Boston has, so I think that they would likely take this matchup. I do have are you a Brad Stevens guy?
Would you make that argument of Spo over Stevens?
I would still come playoff time take Spoelstra for this reason. Brad Stevens would still be without a playoff series win if Rajon Rondo did not go down last year. Now, granted, the 2 years back, I think he was an 8 seed when he was in the playoffs, so you don't have to win that one. I think it was a 4-5 when they played the Hawks. You don't have to win that one. But last year, they were a 1 seed going up against the 8 seed Bulls, who barely got in, and they were really on the verge of being swept when Rondo was healthy. They won the first 2 games in Boston. So, to me, I think that there are reasonable concerns. The one thing, and this is... I just feel like everyone has been so quick to crown Brad Stevens, not just the heir to the throne of Popovich, but like clearly, undeniably the second best coach in the NBA. And you see that kind of in those predictions there, right? Clean sweep, Celtics beating the Bucks. If the Bucks win, though, no one will hold Stevens accountable. That's not to say that we should say he's a bad coach, and I'm glad that you will, because I will as well, but I feel like everybody's going to say, no, not a disappointment, it's fine. Terry Rozier's the point guard.
Yeah, because... Because Kyrie's out, yeah. So Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. Interesting question I heard somebody ask the other day. Should if Gordon Hayward had it to do all over again, would he just stay with the Jazz because Donovan Mitchell's so good? You know, the team is shaping up. So, and they're same experts on, or similar yeah, I think the same experts. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. On the Western side, clean sweep for the Rockets, clean sweep for the Warriors, clean sweep for the Blazers.
Wow.
And they finally mixed it up. A few guys picked the Jazz. I think it's like 3-3. Yeah, 3-3, Jazz Thunder. So, which that wouldn't surprise me. The Thunder have been kind of disappointing all year. I mean, they are the 4 seed, but, you know, we know that what 4 through 9 was basically finished within 2 games of one another,
right?
By the end of the year. So to puff out your chest and saying, well, we're the 4 seed, well, you were a game and a half from being out of the playoffs. So, you know, clearly, I mean, I think there's some good action there. I think that Thunder Jazz series could be interesting, but we all know what's going to go down in the Western Conference. It seems like it's collision course for Rockets Warriors. I think that's what everybody wants to see. I understand you touting the Spurs because of Popovich and their historic success, but, you know, Kawhi's absence, despite the fact that they ended up in the playoffs, Kawhi's absence just makes them a different team and a different kind of threat. Could they steal a couple games? Sure, but I don't think the Warriors are hurt enough to at least lose this series.
Let me ask you this then. It's already ruled out for game one. Let's say the Spurs take game one, which I would not rule out because the Warriors constantly need wake-up calls because they're aware of how talented they are, so they kind of assume victory all the time. Let's say they took game one, the Spurs, and Kawhi was like, you know what, I'm coming back. Would you then take the Spurs rest of the way? They would have stolen home court and they would have Kawhi coming back. Would that be enough for you to switch to the Spurs, or are there still too many question marks of what Kawhi would give you and the overwhelming talent of the Warriors to take that?
I think Kawhi's done. I think he's done. I think he's not coming back.
I think in the hypothetical, I don't think he'll be back. But if Kawhi said, I'll be back game two, and the Spurs had a 1-0 lead early on.
Too rusty. I couldn't count on him to steal wins for them.
I think that's fair.
I appreciate the question, but I can't count on him to do something like that. But that's got to be the most awkward locker room in the league with Kawhi just hanging around. So we're going to talk baseball for the rest of this hour. Have you ever seen a bases-clearing sack fly? One happened last night. We'll talk about that and more on Fantasy Sports Today. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back right after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us today. And you can hit us up on social media. Twitter's the best way to do that. And please do so at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. If you'd like to give us a call today, you can do that too. That's 844-843-6879. Talk about kind of whatever you want, since there's a lot of sports going on today. We can also be heard. I'm sure you're hearing us in a variety of different ways. TuneIn Radio, at iHeartRadio. Variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. And as always, the Fantasy Sports Radio app, which can be done. You can download for free and listen for free. iTunes Store, Google Play. Please do that. So thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. So, like I said before the break, have you ever seen a sack fly, a bases-clearing sack fly? Well, it happened last night. Bases loaded for the Marlins. Starlin Castro is up. He'd grounded into, I think, a couple of double plays already that evening. And he hits a... Bases are loaded. He hits a normal sack fly out to right field. Gregory Polanco catches it, throws it to home, a little bit wide of the plate, so the run scores. The catcher then fires it to second base to try and get everybody else that's trying to tag up, and he fires it into center field, where there's nobody standing because the center fielder tried to back up Polanco. So the ball basically rolls all the way to the warning track, and The runner that had slid into second gets up, and he runs home, as did the player that advanced to third. I'm rewatching it again. It is a comedy of errors, Little League home run style, bases clearing, sack fly. I can't say I ever saw that before. I'm sure it's happened before, but it was quite the play, and it went from a 2-1 deficit to a 4-2 lead for the Marlins in the bottom of the fifth inning.
This is the importance of earned runs to me. Like, could you imagine just being on the mound? It's like,
the pitcher's like, seriously?
Like, you got the pop fly. If we can get him at home, great. But if not, certainly this is damage control. And then that happens. Like, this is why earned runs matter so much. Because the poor guy was the second out, too.
Oh, that was the second out. It should have just been 2-2. Tied up, bottom five, and he's trying to get the third out instead. Bases clearing. And
Wait, did he still get those earned runs?
You wouldn't get those earned runs because it was on an actual error. That's a two-base error by the catcher. And the two earned. So he gets one earned run there.
Right.
And two unearned. So in any way, that's so tough one for him. So to give you a little bit of that box score, let me get to it here. The Marlins went on to win the game 7-2. So there's obviously a big catalyst for a comeback there. And I'll get to the box score in a moment. There we go. Sorry for the delay. And the pitcher that was on the mound at the time was there it is. He got four. No, he did get it. He got four earned runs in that game.
Chad Cool.
Chad
lost his cool after that one, but I'm bumch.
Oh, jeez, that's terrible. So, to be honest, I mean, the Marlins put up 14 hits last night. Dietrich goes 2-for-5. Rojas, 3-for-5. Justin Bauer, 2-for-4. Shuck, 4-for-4. And they get a Peters gets the win last night. Dylan Peters with the win. That's his second win on the season. Chad Cool, 11 hits, 5 runs, 4 earned, a walk. So tough night for him on the mound. As far as the Pirates are concerned, not a lot of hits going around, only 5 hits on the night. Edwin Diaz, 2-for-2, and he gets 2 RBIs as well. He hit a home run. So that was really all their scoring done there. Sorry, what did I say? Elias Diaz is a closer. So in any event, that's it for Marlins Pirates. I watched a little bit of Yanks Tigers last night. The Yankees continue to not look that great. They do get the win, so they're back up to 500, 7-7. But Jordan Montgomery pitched okay last night. It's kind of a typical Jordan Montgomery start. He doesn't get too deep into the game, but he only gives up 3 runs on 5 hits. He ends up with the win, his first of the season. Mike Fears for Detroit he got roughed up last night. He gave up 8 hits, 5 earned runs, and 5 2/3. But the big story last night, well, first of all, Aaron Hicks has had a really good game. He had a inside the park home run as well as a bomb that he hit. So he ends up with 3 RBIs, 2 home runs, one of inside the park fashion, which was, I mean, it took the worst ricochet you could ever see. The center fielder goes over to the ball. He knows it's over his head, so he's just going to try and field it high off the wall, and it took off. It looked like a lacrosse ball bounce, and it rolled all the way back into center field, and Hicks made it home fairly easily. As far as Brett Gardner is concerned, 2-for-4. Any other hits? Miguel Andujar, 2-for-4. So he's starting to hit now. He struggled, obviously, in the first week, but you can never panic about that kind of stuff. Miguel Cabrera, 2-for-5. Nick Castellanos, 2-for-4. Victor Martinez, 2-for-4. And McCann, 2-for-3 with 3 RBIs. So good night for James McCann. Now, the real big story of this coming out of this game for Yankees fans isn't the 8-6 win. It, unfortunately, is Dylan Betances struggles yet again. His ERA is over 8. He's given up 6 earned runs in 6 outings, I believe. No, in 5? Yeah, in 6 outings, I believe. Now, he's also given up 3 home runs. He gave up 3 home runs all of last year in about 60 innings pitched. Now he's given up 3 home runs in, I'd have to look it up, but I think he's only pitched 6 2/3 innings. He's got 6 outings, 12 strikeouts, but he's not getting people out with his breaking ball, and it's a huge problem for now. But based on the way that he finished the year, which was terrible, and the start of this year, do you think he's got any shot to turn this around?
I mean, it's weird because it's when there's a decline like this, it's hard to pinpoint exactly you know, what it could be. I don't think that all of a sudden Dellin Betances doesn't have stuff. He's got good stuff. It's not like he's only 30. It's just, it could be a real mental block, and sometimes that's the scariest thing. I think the Yankees, because they have Chapman and Robertson, maybe they could afford to give Betances a week off, just maybe to clear his headspace, but sometimes that could only make it worse. It's really, really tough to watch. You know, a guy who was, for a while, Betances came in and it was like, oh, this is perfect. We, you know, 1-2-3, set him down. And now it's, you're at the edge of your seat. You're praying to just get out of there, maybe one run. I mean, he has had three games where he's come in and you know, one inning, no earned runs, that's been fine. But he's just, it seems like when things are going bad for him, it goes really, really south.
Agreed. And the problem now is that I think Aaron Boone is going to get to a point where, and he probably is already at this point, where he's just not going to trust Betances, and he's going to be a mop-up guy. He trusts three guys right now in this bullpen: Dave Robertson, Chad Green, and Aroldis Chapman. That's mm-hmm. it. That's the bullpen. Tommy Kahnle's control has been a little off thus far, and I like Kahnle. I actually think I like Kahnle more than Betances, but it's hard not to. Kahnle finished the year great last year. People are going to remember, you know, playoff snafu against the Astros in Game 7, but honestly, Kahnle had pitched lights out for like 2 months, so and he got overused, really, in that series. So, I don't really know what this means. Can he go to the minors? I don't even know if he has an option, A. B, do they have to get him out of here because he just needs a change of scenery and it's not going to turn around with pressure on? I mean, you can't use him in a high-leverage situation. No. He wasn't in a high-leverage situation at all last night. The Yankees had a huge lead when he came in, and he got the game close. So...
Didn't he have a golden inning last year, too? I mean, obviously, obviously it's a very isolated situation. But it's like, if I'm not mistaken, he had a golden inning, right? Three,
like nine strikes?
Nine strikes, all strikeouts.
I'm sure. He's got that kind of stuff.
It's still there. Like, it's still there. It's just, it seems like a mental block. And I mean, that's easier for us to say on the outside, just, oh, a player doesn't have it, it's got to be mental. I mean, but I think, you know, being a relief pitcher is fairly similar, I would say, to being a kicker in the NFL, where it's something that, I mean, if there's enough repetition and you get to that level, you're good at it. It's just, if you really start to see things go south, it's probably mental.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't know how to fix it, but I think Aaron Boone may already be tired of it, and we're only at April 14th, 14 games into the year. So we'll have to see. Obviously, this kind of stuff for closers and for relievers gets very scrutinized, and probably there's some overreaction to it. But if you can't trust the guy for the one job that he has, then that's why we get to this point, right? He's got one job. It's to come in there and get outs. So if he gives up some run occasionally, that's okay. He's coming in and getting bombed and giving up three home runs in 6 2/3 innings, it's a huge problem. You know, so you have to keep track of that for fantasy purposes. I mean, the only thing he's going to get you is holds anyway. So I know he's not it's not a fantasy relevant conversation, but at the same time, he's a player that just a year ago was a guy that you could have on your roster for holds and an occasional save, mm-hmm. because Chapman went sideways for a while. You know,
yeah.
Could the same thing happen here? We'll see. I mean, I give Girardi a lot of credit for turning Chapman around last year. Sometimes baseball managers get denigrated for how little input they have or how little they do, but I give Joe Girardi a lot of credit for the way he was able to turn Chapman around. Can Boone do the same for Betances? We shall see. So, moving on.
Can I ask you where you're at with Stanton?
I'm not panicked about it. I will say last night, though, that game was almost worse than some of the five strikeout games he's had, because he has a weak pop-up to the catcher in the first inning,
yeah.
and then a weak fielder's choice. Then he strikes out twice. And then with the bases loaded, he nubs it back to the pitcher. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, of all the things that could have happened on this bat, you nubbed it back to the pitcher, and the catcher declined to throw over to first because I think it was too risky of a play at the time, but he could have been doubled up on that. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Like, a five strikeout game is terrible. I understand that. But you can chalk it up to, like, having a bad night. But with an entire array of bad at-bats last night with different outcomes, I was like, you have to be kidding me. But I'm not panicked at all. I'm notoriously easy on guys that come into big baseball cities on deals or contracts like this. I'm a Yankees fan, so typically it's how I judge Yankees. But a lot of guys have come in here and struggled in the first year and then turned it around. Would I like him to start hitting 50 homers and get on a tear?
It'd be great if we could run that play.
But he's here for 10 years. So I'm not going to lose my mind in the first month. He's a slow starter in general. He's playing in cold weather all over the place. And I think weather starts to warm up. He can smooth it out. Players have bad months, bad half of seasons. See Manny Machado last year and can still turn it around. I'm not panicked. I will not be beating him up at all.
I'll say I got the absolute honor of watching one of the five strikeout games, the 0-for-7 game, that Sunday against the Orioles that went to extras.
Sweet. And yeah, good thing it went to extras to get those extra at bats.
No, it was real great. It was really incredible to watch the ugliness of that game and then have bases loaded, nobody out, Judge up and Stanton on deck. When Judge grounded out into that double play and they also got the lead runner, that was shocking. That was shocking. When Stanton struck out for a fifth time, that was the least shocking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It was kind of an assumed thing. And I just, again, it is April, but I don't think that he can really afford to get to a space where it's kind of an assumed strikeout at home. I do think that there's going to have to be, and it'll come, I still believe that, but there's going to have to be a week and a half stretch where he completely lights the Bronx on fire just to kind of satisfy that, because right now, he can't feel all
too comfortable.
He's lighting
on fire right now, all right. People are going to start lighting fires.
No, they really will.
In the Bronx. Yeah, he's getting booed and all that kind of stuff. He's going to have to learn what to deal with it.
Yeah,
I
think
he gets paid $25 million a year. Mm-hmm. He can figure it out.
He has to feel comfortable at home, and right now he probably doesn't, and I think for fair reason. And I mean, listen, it's a quick turnaround for a guy like him. If he hits two home runs in a series, then everyone will be on his side. Like, that's what everyone's waiting for. But it'll have to come. I will say, and I'm not sure, I wish we had Jake Seeley right on hand. But I'm curious how a start like this for a guy that I know Jake had, I think, top three, if not second overall in his rankings, how, because he does full season projections, how this could shift, or is there just an expectation that it ultimately all balances out? Like, I can't imagine that after, you know, I mean, I know it's 14 games, but after this 14-game start for Stanton, that him finishing as the number two or number three overall player would still be in play.
Well, I didn't expect that going in. I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Me, you, and George did.
That was an aggressive projection, but you know, in George and my mind, I think we had him around a top 15 player. So we'll see. Look, we're not even 10% of the way through the season yet. So you try to take it in chunks. You know, 10%, 16 games at a time. He's not going to play 162 games. Put him at 150. Games, 155 games. You know, we're not even at 10% of his output yet, and he still does have a few homers. So, you know, we'll see. It's gonna take some time for the Yankees to work through this stuff. I'm not the type of Yankee fan that panics, but the Red Sox are 11-2, Yanks are 7-7, and they just haven't been playing well. I think is the larger concern. Forget the fact that some of these stats aren't good. They just haven't been playing crisp baseball. But in any event, let's move on to another game. The Mets can't lose.
Apparently.
11-1. Come from behind win two, three nights ago, and then this game last night, 6-5. They used a whole bunch of pitchers. Steven Matz gets his first win of the season. Seth Lugo with a hold. Ramos with a hold. Gesellman with a hold. And Familia locks down the save in the 6-5 win against the Brew Crew. But 11-1. I mean, they are on fire. There's nothing else you can say. As Drubal Cabrera, two more hits, two runs scored. Suspedes, 2-for-4. Todd Frazier, 3-for-3. He's the star of the night with the two solo home runs. So, really nice game for them overall. And what can I say? The Mets are playing some really good baseball.
They still feel like the best April team every year, though. I mean, I just, I don't know if that's just being in New York and just hearing them always talk about how they now own the city and then it's just consistently collapsing on top of them. But, I mean, they're off to an incredible start. Familia having 7 saves in the team's first 12 games is impeccable.
Crazy.
So, I mean, obviously you have to be excited about this. I now think they're certainly going to have to figure out what they want to do at catcher. They've brought up a pair of guys, Darno done for the year, and Plucky out for a bit. And I think there was a fair point, I don't remember who made it, somewhere on the interweb, though, was basically when you start 11-1 or 10-1 when they had made the comment, you can't as easily just put up complete negatives at the plate to where they might be forced to make the move for a replacement catcher quicker than they may have if they offer up to 5-5 start.
Jerris Familia, 9 innings pitched, 11 strikeouts, 7 saves, has not given a run yet. So the rumors about them trading for JT Realmuto, but that would be a big price. Brandon Nimmo would be involved in that. We'll be back to talk more baseball right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Walsh is clapping to come out of the break. Oh, this is Miley Cyrus. That's who that is. Yeah. Everybody getting down to Miley. Pete Considori getting it going. Party in the USA. So we're back talking about baseball. I want to give you a heads up for the rest of the day. We're here until noon Eastern. And then taking over from there, it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. They're 12 to 3. And then from 3 to 6, you have Tony Sincotta and Joe Gallina. That is a weekend fantasy update. So they'll take you around the world of baseball in particular. But they'll talk about some other sports as well. I'm sure they'll get a Dez conversation going. Tony's going to be joining us at 11:40, so right before Bogman and the Welsh. He'll come in for about 20 minutes and join us to talk about a variety of topics. And at 10:20 today, we'll have Emery Hunt, F-Ball Game Plan on Twitter. And Emery Hunt's going to come in and talk about some sleepers in this year's draft. I also want to talk about the 2019 QB class. A little bit of a topic today is just talking about the state of quarterbacks in the NFL, because we've beaten these 5-6 top quarterbacks in this NFL draft to a pulp with discussion. And some people think that these guys really aren't that good and shouldn't get drafted in the first round, but I think there's a reason why teams are clamoring to get these guys, and I actually am predicting now that we'll see 6 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, and we're going to go through a snapshot of what the league looks like over the next couple of years and why teams may be clamoring for these QBs. QB class 2019 may not be so good, and there's a lot of guys, teams with tenuous quarterbacking situations for the long term, like the Saints, Steelers, and some others. So we'll get into that a little bit more deeper. Before we talk about Gerrit Cole, who had an unbelievable run, I want to talk about Daily Roto. And you can dominate DraftKings and FanDuel Major League Baseball contests this summer with Daily Roto's MLB projections and optimizer. Go to dailyroto.com/premium and save 10% with the promo code FNTSY to use all the same tools and projections that have produced 4 millionaire winners and millions more in total winnings than that. So head over to dailyroto.com/premium, save 10% with the promo code FNTSY, and see the results for yourself. So K-Dubs told me during the break, he's like, got to talk about Gerrit Cole. He's right. We probably should have led the entire baseball segment with that. But nonetheless, Gerrit Cole is on fire. He now joins Nolan Ryan as the only pitcher in Major League history to strike out at least 11 batters in three consecutive starts to a season. He struck out a career-high 14 batters in seven innings last night and tied a Minute Maid Park record by an Astros pitcher in the process. They won the game 3-2, so they needed every ounce of what he could give them. And George Springer, the hitting star, he goes 2-for-4, two runs scored, and two homers last night, two solo shots off of Cole Hamels twice. So Gerrit Cole on the season, a 1.29 ERA. He gives up the two runs last night with the 14 strikeouts. He actually gave up a couple of homers, a couple of solo homers there. But on the season, is that his first win? Yeah, he's 1-0, 1.29 ERA, 21 innings pitched, but 36 strikeouts. Impressive.
Can I give you a piece of trivia? Because you mentioned Nolan Ryan, that I you may know this, but I remember when I first found this out, I thought it was very interesting. Do you know how many Cy Youngs Nolan Ryan has won?
Cy Youngs. I don't know if he won any, but I'll give him one.
It was zero. I thought when I found that, it was one of the most shocking things I've ever seen in my entire life. But that's never.
He never had stellar. He very rarely had stellar records. Is part of the reason. And old school baseball.
That's all they cared
about. Wanted to see you go. I mean, that's when you look back historically. They wanted guys putting up big win totals. Bob Welch with 27 games and Denny McClain winning 30. And very often that was the case. He was never a low ERA guy. There's sabermetrics guys that still think Nolan Ryan is horribly overrated. But obviously he was a big-time strikeout guy. His ERA wasn't all that low. He racked up a lot of losses in his career too. So from a singular season standpoint, yeah, he had a 383 strikeout season. But if you go back, I'll even look. I mean, it's crazy, right?
It's just nonsense. He struck out
383 batters, which is, he beat Koufax's record by one strikeout. But I'm going to go back and look at Nolan Ryan's career and 383 strikeout season. By the way, three seasons in a row. Here you go. Nolan Ryan from 72 to 74. 329 strikeouts, 383 strikeouts, 367 strikeouts. But his records in those seasons are 19-16, 21-16, and 22-16. And his top Cy Young finish. Oh, how is this possible?
He got it second it
cuts
once.
Off the, he came in second in 1973. That was a 383 strikeout year. Another Cy Young, top three Cy Young three times in his career, top five two more times. So there you go. It came close, and I'll even look, go back. You got me down a wormhole now. Once you get me into baseball reference, Kev, I mean, screwed. Everybody's screwed. So Jim Palmer won it that year. Nolan Ryan got first place votes. Palmer had 14 first place votes. That same season, Palmer was 22-9, so more wins, far less losses. He pitched 296 innings to Nolan Ryan's 326. The strikeouts were drastically different, 383 to 158.
158?
But the ERA, 2.4 for Palmer, 2.87. So are you going to vote for the guy with a 21-16 record and a 2.87 ERA or a 22-9 with a 2.4? Keep in mind, ERAs were lower back then. So the 2.87 is impressive, but it's not like a 2018 2.87.
There's not a drastic enough difference in the ERA to justify double the strikeouts. To me, I mean, surprisingly enough, I know people are going to be shocked by this. I didn't have a Cy Young vote in 1973. But if I did, I'm going Nolan Ryan. That's just me.
Yeah. 162 walks for Nolan Ryan, 113 for Palmer. 1.14 whip for Palmer, 1.22 whip for Nolan Ryan. Not a big difference there. Catfish Hunter came in third. He was 21-5 that year.
What about the Catfish?
With only 124 strikeouts. So
that's crazy. He threw 200 more strikeouts than him. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
It's not even like everyone in the era was just like, oh, yeah, it's like, he did 383, but, there are plenty of guys that were in the threes.
Nolan Ryan threw 100 miles an hour, and nobody else did. I mean, now it's like, it's funny because there's 30 guys that have done it, like, in the last 5 years.
Not to.
He was the only one until like Rob Dibble showed up and started hammering, you know, hammering people's gloves with the fastball. Anyway, let's get back to Gerrit Cole because you got a Nolan Ryan wormhole.
Well,
thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
Well, so the reason why I mentioned the Cy Young stuff is because I'm in a fantasy league with my brother, and he was feeling super great when he got Gerrit Cole. In the first game of the year, he had 11 Ks, and he's like, man, you know, maybe Gerrit Cole can win Cy Young. I'm like, stop this. He's not the best pitcher. I don't even know if he's the second best pitcher on this team. He's not in a, you know, we just play for fun, so he's not going into all the different advanced metrics and stuff. But he's like, listen, he's really good. He's now going to a supreme winning situation. Wins could be there. He could be rejuvenated. We'll see what happens. So then the second appearance, you know, 11 strikeouts again. He's like, I'm telling you, he's got this. And then last night he comes down to the basement. He goes, hey, you see Gerrit Cole? I'm like, yeah, I saw. He goes, Cy Young, lock it in. So now he's completely convinced that Gerrit Cole is going to win the Cy Young through three starts, which, to be fair, 36 strikeouts to four walks. Pretty damn impressive, Gerrit Cole.
36 strikeouts in his first three starts with a new team surpasses Randy Johnson in 1999 with the Diamondbacks. So it's an MLB record in his first three starts with a new team.
Some good company.
At 34. He certainly is. Pretty crazy. So that's where Gerrit Cole is at. Wherever you drafted Gerrit Cole, doesn't matter whether he's the first pick overall in your draft or the third round or the steal. Fifth round, he is a steal right now. I really, really did want the Yankees to get Gerrit Cole.
Yeah?
Because that was bandied around a lot. It was. I just felt like he was a guy. I mean, his career stats aren't overwhelming, but I just liked his mentality. I liked his talent level. He's only 27 right now. I just thought this would be a move. And then the Giancarlo Stanton thing happened, and it was like, you know, it came out of nowhere, and I wasn't an anti-Stanton guy. I have friends that still are standing by. I mean, now they're looking pretty good when they're saying they didn't want Stanton. But at the same time, I know guys that said doesn't matter how he produces or even if they win a World Series, they don't like the Giancarlo Stanton deal. You know, too much money for too long. And I respect that. A good friend of mine, Eddie, knows a ton about baseball, and he beats this drum all the time.
I would like to talk to
Eddie. He said he wouldn't give anybody a deal for more than 6 years. He just, that's the way he likes it.
Well,
I tell him all the time he's rooting for the wrong team because that's just not who the Yankees are. And if they sign Bryce Harper, or I don't know how that happened. It's a longtime Jet, Bruce Harper. Bryce Harper or Manny Machado next year, you can't be surprised. Like, they're not out of the running. They just are never out of the running for stuff like that. So, Gerrit Cole is the guy that I wanted.
That's fair. I'm curious, though, Eddie, because this is my strong opinion. You cannot be upset with a Stanton trade because of what the Yankees gave up. They gave up nothing. And the money isn't coming out of Eddie's pocket. So I think that Eddie should be okay with it. Now, as far as the years thing goes, if you're like, that's a lot of years for Stanton, I'm okay with it. I would be interested to see if Eddie maintains that you can only give Bryce Harper, who is 12 years old, 6 years. Because I think that you can certainly justify giving him 10 years. So much so that he might ask for 15.
I mean, you can justify. You can always justify something.
No, but even in his...
Is it a prudent investment?
But even in his way of looking at it, which I think is a totally logical way of, like, there's no way you can give someone 10 years and actually think that you're going to get 10 years of production in almost every scenario. Right. But Bryce Harper is 24. There are plenty of guys that are still all-star level guys at 34 years of age. And Bryce Harper is certainly one of the best players in all of baseball. Like, I think
he's going to get it, Kev. He's going to get the
deal. No, my point, though, would be if Eddie is okay with that. I just want to talk to Eddie, Mike.
No,
that's what I want.
No. No, he's out.
He
said he wouldn't give it to anybody. Not Harper, not Machado. He's out. He's out on all of it. And I said, you won't get them. He's like, fine. Then we'll build it the other way. Like, I joke with him that he's rooting for the wrong team, but he would prefer to have not had Stanton and then build it up with some of these young players who are good, right? Like Clint Frazier and Aaron Hicks, and they could figure it out when Gardner leaves.
None of those guys left.
Andujar and Torres. I know. So he's saying, why do that when we still have starting pitching issues and CeCe's out and Sonny Gray I don't even know what to think of Sonny Gray. And you don't know if Tanaka's going to get hurt or, you know, all this kind of stuff is swirling around. Severino is probably the guy you're most confident in. But yeah. What happened in the playoffs last year? It was a third of an inning. Mm. So there are questions surrounding pitching. The reality is, yes, money not coming out of their pocket. But does that contract tie their hands if they want to sign somebody else? When Brian Cashman consistently talks about staying under the cap. I never believe the Yankees when they say things like that in total, because they usually they say that this is their plan and then they go back on the plan. You know, the Jacoby Ellsbury signing is evidence of that, where they said we're going to really strip it back, and then they gave the guy who is a good player because he uses his legs a ton of money well into his 30s. It didn't make any sense the day it happened. It doesn't make sense now, and it's proven to be a horrible signing. But in any event, yeah, that's right. He's out. He wouldn't do it. 6 years, 8 years, 10, you know, no more than six. That's his limit.
You can't.
And he thinks he should just build it a different way. Now going back to the money in the pot, money out of your own pocket thing, I don't believe the Yankees. And I will say that cap or not, the Yankees spend a lot of money, yes. But as a percentage of the money that they make, the Yankees are about middle of the league. About middle of the league.
Yeah.
There's stats you can look up where the Mets actually spend a higher percentage of their revenues than the Yankees.
Don't let Mets fans hear
that. You know, there's other teams that are lower than the Yankees. But just, you know, it's something to keep in mind. The Yankees do make a filthy amount of money. And they don't spend as much percentage on the team as others do.
I have one request. If we are lucky enough to still be doing this show together whenever the off season rolls around for baseball, the Yankees grab, whether it be Machado, Harper, whatever the situation may be, I'd like to have Eddie on and just chat with him.
He will lose his mind if that happens. He will lose his mind. He's going to lose his mind.
8 years for Harper? 8 years? He'd be 32. He'd still be in his prime.
They have to pay Judge.
What? Like, at in 90 point. Years? Judge is older than Harper.
I know. I know. He and Mike Trout are like 6 months apart from each other in age. It's kind of funny because Aaron Judge is new on the scene, and Mike Trout is like, oh, that guy?
He's like, I've been running baseball for years.
Like, I don't even really, like, the average fan is like, who? Mike Trout? Like, it's just kind of funny that one of the best baseball players of all time is playing, and people are like, oh, I never watched the Angels. You know, it's like, probably should, because he's the best player ever. So,
speaking of the Angels, quickly, if I may, I just realized this.
Yeah.
I don't know how often you frequent ESPN's website, but I know they did this back when the Miami Heat did their whole Heatles thing, whatever, but there's an Otani tracker on ESPN. That's pretty cool.
I was going to talk about the Angels game next.
What a segue.
Otani goes two for four last night. Zach Cozart, 3 for 4. Pujols, 2 for 5. He is creeping up on 3,000, by the way. I think he's 16 hits away. Let me just double-check that number. Saw it last night. Might be even less. He's got 2,987, so he's 13 hits away from the number. He's going in the Hall of Fame anyway, but that'll give him the magic numbers. He's 305,000 guy. 3,600 guy, which is only
could you imagine
how many 3,600? Yeah, 5,000 hits and 600 homers or whatever the hell I just said. So 3,600 club, that is rare. And he's creeping up on 2,000 RBIs.
What even is that, like Aaron Bonds?
Probably. Did Barry Bonds have 3,000 hits?
I just assume so, but I'm going to see if I can find it.
We'll do that during the break. Ian Kinsler, 3 for 4 last night. Mike Trout, 1 for 4. They are 12-3. I think the Angels are a surprise team. Win goes to Blake Wood. One of the relievers gets a win last night because it was decided by the Angels coming from behind yet again last night. Scored 3 in the 7th and 8th. They win the game 5-4. So that's it. Jason Hamill got the start for the Royals. 5 1/3, 8 hits, 2 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. Heaney got the start for the Angels. 5 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits with 7 Ks. We're coming back in the second hour to talk about football. It's Mike and Kevin. We'll be back on FST.